No words for me, I see, the knight said. Very well. But should you wish to learn true leadership, come to Urethiru.
Dalinar turned to the Stormfather.
That's almost exactly what the knight said to me last time. By design, certain things always happen in the visions, the Stormfather replied. I do not know Honor's every intention, but I know he wished you to interact with Radiance and know that men could join them. All who resist are needed, the Radiant said to Fen. Indeed, any who have a desire to fight should be compelled to come to Alethala. We can teach you, help you. If you have the soul of a warrior, that passion could destroy you unless you are guided. Come to us.
The Radiant strode off, then Fen jumped as Seelie stood up and started talking to her. The girl's voice was too quiet for Dalinar to hear, but he could guess what was happening. At the end of each vision, the Almighty himself spoke through one of the people, passing along wisdom that, at first, Dalinar had assumed was interactive. Fen seemed troubled by what she heard. As well she should be. Dalinar remembered the words. This is important, the Almighty had said. Do not let strife consume you. Be strong. Act with honor, and honor will aid you. Except honor was dead. At the end of it, Fen turned toward Dalinar, her eyes measuring.
She still does not trust you, the Stormfather said. She wonders if I created this vision with the power of the Voidbringers. She no longer thinks I'm mad, but she does continue to wonder if I've joined the enemy. So you've failed again.
No, Dalinar said.
Tonight she listened, and I think she'll end up taking the gamble of coming to Urethiru.
The Stormfather rumbled, sounding confused.
Why?
Because, Dalinar said,
I know how to talk to her now.
She doesn't want polite words or diplomatic phrases. She wants me to be myself.
I'm fairly certain that's something I can deliver.
35. First into the sky.
You think yourself so clever, but my eyes are not those of some petty noble to be clouded by a false nose and some dirt on the cheeks. Someone bumped Sigzil's cot, waking him from a dream. He yawned, and Rock's breakfast bell began ringing in the next room. He'd been dreaming in Azish. He'd been back home studying for the governmental service tests. Passing would have qualified him to enter a real school with a shot at becoming a clerk to someone important. Only in the dream, he'd been panicked to realize he'd forgotten how to read. After so many years away, thinking of his mother tongue felt strange. He yawned again, settling on his cot, back to the stone wall. They had three small barracks and a common room in the center. Out there, everyone pushed, ramble-scramble, up to the breakfast table. Rock had to shout at them, yet again, to organize themselves. Months in Bridge 4, now apprentice Knights Radiant, and a lot of them still couldn't figure out how to line up properly. They wouldn't last a day in Azir, where queuing in an orderly way wasn't only expected, it was practically a mark of national pride. Sigzil rested his head against the wall, remembering. He'd been the first from his family in generations with a real shot at passing the exams. A silly dream. Everyone in Azir talked about how even the humblest man could become prime, but the son of a laborer had so little time to study. He shook his head, then washed with a basin of water he'd fetched the night before. He took a comb to his hair and inspected himself in a polished length of steel. His hair was growing far too long. The tight black curls had a tendency to stick straight out. He set out a sphere to use its light for a shave. He had acquired his own razor. Soon after he started, however, he nicked himself. He sucked in a breath at the pain, and his sphere winked out. What? His skin started glowing, letting off a faint, luminescent smoke.
Oh, right.
Kaladin was back. Well, that was going to solve so many problems. He got out another sphere and did his best not to eat this one as he finished shaving. Afterward, he pressed his hand against his forehead. Once, he'd had slave brands there. The stormlight had healed those, though his Bridge 4 tattoo remained. He rose and put on his uniform. Colin blue, sharp and neat. He slid his new hogshide notebook into his pocket, then stepped out into the common room, and stopped short as Lopin's face swung down right in front of him. Sigzel almost slammed into the Herdazian, who was stuck by the bottoms of his feet to the storming ceiling.
"Hey!"
Lopin said, bowl of morning porridge held upside down, or, well, right side up, but upside down to Lopin, in front of him. The Herdazian tried to take a bite, but the porridge slipped off his spoon and splatted to the ground.
"Lopin, what are you doing?"
"Practicing. I've got to show them how good I am, Hooch. It's like with women, only it involves sticking yourself to the ceiling and learning not to spill food on the heads of people you like."
"Move, Lopin."
"Ah, you have to ask the right way. I'm not one-armed anymore. I can't be shoved around. Say, do you know how to get two-armed Herdazians to do what you want?"
"If I did, we wouldn't be having this conversation."
"Well, you take away both of their spears, obviously."
He grinned. A few feet away, Rock laughed with a loud,
"Huh!"
Lopin wiggled his fingers at Sigzil, as if to taunt him, fingernails glistening. Like all Herdazians, he had fingernails that were dark brown and hard as crystal, a bit reminiscent of carapace. He still had a tattoo on his head, too. Though so far only a few of Bridge Four had learned to draw in Stormlight, each of those had kept their tattoos. Only Kaladin was different. His tattoo had melted off once he took in Stormlight, and his scars refused to heal.
"Remember that one for me, Hooch?" Lopin said.
He never would explain what Hooch meant, or why he used it only to refer to Sigzil.
"I'll need sure lots and lots of new jokes. Also sleeves. Twice as many of those, except on vests. Then the same number."
"How did you even manage to get up there, so you could stick your feet—"
"No, don't start. I don't actually want to know."
Sigzil ducked under Lopin. The men were still scrambling for food, laughing and shouting in complete disarray. Sigzil shouted to get their attention.
"Don't forget! The captain wanted us up and ready for inspection by second bell."
Sigzil could barely be heard. Where was Teft? They actually listened when he gave orders. Sigzil shook his head, weaving his way toward the door. Among his people, he was of average height. But he'd gone and moved among the Alethi, who were practically giants. So here, he was a few inches shorter than most. He slipped out into the hallway. The bridge crews occupied a sequence of large barracks on the tower's first floor. Bridge Four were gaining radiant powers, but there were hundreds more men in the battalion who were still ordinary infantry. Perhaps Teft had gone to inspect the other crews. He'd been given responsibility for training them. Hopefully it wasn't the other thing. Kaladin bunked in his own small suite of rooms at the end of the hallway. Sigzil made his way there, going over his scribbles in the notebook. He used Alethi glyphs, as was acceptable for a man out here, and had never learned their actual writing system. Storms, he'd been away so long, the dream was probably right. He might have trouble writing in the Azish script. What would life be like if he hadn't turned into a failure and a disappointment? If he'd passed the tests instead of getting into trouble, needing to be rescued by the man who had become his master? "The list of problems first," he decided, reaching Kaladin's door and knocking.
"Come,"
the captain's voice said from inside. Sigzil found Kaladin doing morning push-ups on the stone floor. His blue jacket was draped over a chair.
"Sir,"
Sigzil said.
"Hey, Sig,"
Kaladin said, grunting as he continued his push-ups.
"Are the men up and mustered?"
"Up, yes," Sigzil said. When I left them, they seemed bordering on a food fight, and only half were in uniform.
They'll be ready, Kaladin said. Was there something you wanted, Sig?
Sigzil settled down in the chair next to Kaladin's coat and opened his notebook.
A lot of things, sir. Not the least of which is the fact that you should have a real scribe, not whatever I am.
You're my clerk.
A poor one. We have a full battalion of fighting men with only 3 lieutenants and no official scribes. Frankly, sir, the bridge crews are a mess. Our finances are in shambles, requisition orders are piling up faster than Leighton can deal with them, and there's an entire host of problems requiring an officer's attention.
Kaladin grunted.
The fun part of running an army.
Exactly.
That was sarcasm, Sig. Kaladin stood up and wiped his brow with a towel.
All right, go ahead.
We'll start with something easy, Sigzil said. Pete is now officially betrothed to the woman he's been seeing.
Ka? That's wonderful.
Maybe she could help you with scribe duties.
Perhaps. I believe that you were looking into requisitioning housing for men with families?
Yeah, that was before the whole mess with the Weeping and the expedition under the Shattered Plains, and... And I should go back to Dalinar's scribes about it, shouldn't I?
Unless you expect the married couples to share a bunk in the standard barracks, then I'd say that yes, you should.
Sigzil looked to the next page in his book.
I believe Bissig is close to being betrothed as well.
Really? He's so quiet. I never know what's going on behind those eyes of his.
Not to mention Punio, who I found out recently is already married. His wife drops off food for him.
I thought that was his sister.
He wanted to fit in, I believe, Sigzil said. His broken Alethi already makes that hard. And then there's the matter of Drahi.
What matter?
Well, he's been courting a man, you see.
Kaladin threw on his coat, chuckling.
I did know about that one. You only now noticed?
Sigzil nodded.
It's Drew he's been seeing still, from the district quartermaster's offices?
Yes, sir.
Sigzil looked down.
Sir, I... Well, it's just that...
Yes?
Sir, Drahi hasn't filled out the proper forms, Sigzil said. If he wants to court another man, he needs to apply for social reassignment, right?
Kaladin rolled his eyes. So, there were no forms for that in Alethkar. Sigzil couldn't say he was surprised, as the Alethi didn't have proper procedures for anything.
Then how do you apply for social reassignment?
We don't. Kaladin frowned.
Is this really that big a problem to you, Sig?
Maybe, sir, it's not this specifically. Right now there are 4 religions represented in Bridge 4.
4?
Haber follows the Passions, sir. 4, even if you don't count Teft, who I can't figure out rightly. And now there's all this talk of Bright Lord Dalinar claiming the Almighty is dead, and... Well, I feel responsible, sir.
For Dalinar?
Kaladin frowned.
No, no.
He took a deep breath. There had to be a way to explain this. What would his master do?
And now,
Sigzil said, scrambling at an idea.
Everybody knows that Mishim, the 3rd moon, is the most clever and wily of the moons.
All right. And this is relevant. Why?
Because of a story, Sigzil said.
Hush.
Please listen, sir. You see, there are 3 moons, and the 3rd moon is the cleverest. And she doesn't want to be in the sky, sir. She wants to escape. So one night, she tricked the queen of the Natan people. This was a long time ago, so they were still around. I mean, they're still around now, but they were more around then, sir. And the moon tricked her. And then they traded places until they stopped. And now the Natan people have blue skin. Does that make sense?
Kaladin blinked.
I have no idea what you just said.
Sigzil said. It's obviously fanciful. Not the real reason that the Natan people have blue skin, and...
It was supposed to explain something?
It's how my master always did things, Sigzil said,
looking at his feet.
He'd tell a story any time someone was confused, or when people were angry at him. And, well, it changed everything, somehow.
He looked to Kaladin.
I suppose, Kaladin said slowly, that maybe you feel like a moon?
No, not really.
It was about responsibility, but he had really not explained it well. Storms. Master Hoyt had named him a full world singer, and here he couldn't even tell a story straight.
Kaladin clapped him on the shoulder.
It's all right, Sig.
Sir,
Sigzel said, the other men don't have any direction. You've given them purpose, a reason to be good men. They are good men. But in some ways it was easy when we were slaves. What do we do if not all the men manifest the ability to draw in Stormlight? What is our place in the army? Bright Lord Colin released us from guard duty as he said he wanted us practicing and training as Radiants instead. But what is a Knight Radiant?
We'll need to figure it out.
And if the men need guidance? If they need a moral center? Someone has to talk to them when they're doing something wrong. But the Ardents ignore us, since they associate us with the things Bright Lord Dalinar is saying and doing.
You think you can be the one to guide the men instead? Kaladin asked.
Someone should, sir.
Kaladin waved for Sigzel to follow him out into the corridor. Together they started walking toward the Bridge 4 barracks, Sigzel holding out a sphere for light.
I don't mind if you want to be something like our unit's Ardent, Kaladin said. The men like you, Sig, and they put a lot of stock in what you have to say. But you should try to understand what they want out of life, and respect that, rather than projecting onto them what you think they should want out of life.
But, sir, some things are just wrong. You know what Teft has gotten into, and Huio. He's been visiting the prostitutes.
That's not forbidden. Storms, I've had some sergeants who suggested it as the key to a healthy mind in battle.
It's wrong, sir. It's imitating an oath without the commitment. Every major religion agrees to this except the Reshi, I suppose. But they're pagans even among pagans.
Your master teach you to be this judgmental?
Sigzel stopped short.
I'm sorry, Sig, Kaladin said.
No, he said the same thing about me. All the time, sir.
I give you permission to sit down with Huio and explain your worries, Kaladin said. I won't forbid you from expressing your morals. I'd encourage it. Just don't present your beliefs as our code. Present them as yours, and make a good argument. Maybe the men will listen.
Sigzel nodded, hurrying to catch up.
To cover his embarrassment, more at completely failing to tell the right story than anything else, he dug into his notebook.
That does raise another issue, sir. Bridge 4 is down to 28 members after our losses during the first Everstorm. Might be time for some recruitment.
Recruitment? Kaladin said.
He cocked his head.
Well, if we lose any more members, we won't,
Kaladin said. He always thought that.
Or, even if we don't, we're down from the 35 or 40 of a good bridge crew. Maybe we don't need to keep that number, but a good active unit should always be watching for people to recruit. What if someone else in the army has been displaying the right attitude to be a windrunner? Or, more pointedly, what if our men start swearing oaths and bonding their own spren? Would we dissolve Bridge 4 and let each man be their own Radiant?
The idea of dissolving Bridge 4 seemed to pain Kaladin almost as much as the idea of losing men in battle. They walked in silence for a short time. They weren't going to the Bridge 4 barracks after all. Kaladin had taken a turn deeper into the tower. They passed a water wagon, pulled by laborers to deliver water from the wells to the officers' quarters. Normally, that would be parshman work.
We should at least put out a call for recruitment, Kaladin finally said. Though honestly, I can't think of how I'll cull hopefuls down to a manageable number.
I'll try to come up with some strategies, sir, Sigzel said. If I might ask, where are we?
He trailed off as he saw Lynn hurrying down the hallway toward them. She carried a diamond chip in her palm for light and wore her Colin uniform, her dark Alethi hair pulled back in a tail. She drew up when she saw Kaladin, then saluted him smartly.
Just the man I was looking for,
Quartermaster Vevidar sends word that your unusual request has been fulfilled, sir.
Excellent, Kaladin said, marching through the hallway past her. Sigzil shot her a look as she fell in with him, and she shrugged. She didn't know what the unusual request was, only that it had been fulfilled. Kaladin eyed Lin as they walked.
You're the one who has been helping my men, right? Lin, was it?
Yes, sir.
In fact, it seems you've been making excuses to run messages to Bridge 4.
Yes, sir.
Not afraid of the lost radiance, then?
Frankly, sir, after what I saw on the battlefield, I'd rather be on your side than bet on the opposition.
Kaladin nodded, thoughtful as he walked. Lin, he finally said, how would you like to join the Windrunners? The woman stopped in place, jaw dropping.
Sir?
She saluted.
Sir, I'd love that. Storms!
Excellent, Kaladin said.
Sig, can you get her our ledgers and accounts?
Lin's hand drooped from her brow.
Ledgers? Accounts?
The men will also need letters written to family members, Kaladin said. And we should probably write a history of Bridge 4. People will be curious, and a written account will save me from having to explain it all the time.
Oh, Lin said. A scribe.
Of course, Kaladin said, turning back toward her in the hallway, frowning. You're a woman, aren't you?
I thought you were asking... I mean, in the High Prince's visions, there were women who were Knights Radiant, and with Brightness Shallan...
She blushed.
Sir, I didn't join the scouts because I liked sitting around staring at ledgers. If that's what you're offering, I'll have to pass.
Her shoulders fell, and she wouldn't meet Kaladin's eyes. Sigzil found strangely that he wanted to punch his captain. Not hard, mind you, just a gentle wake-up punch. He couldn't remember feeling that way with Kaladin since the time the captain had woken him up that first morning back in Sadius's war camp.
I see, Kaladin said.
Well, we're going to have tryouts to join the Order proper. I suppose I could extend you an invitation, if you'd like.
Tryouts, she said. For real positions? Not just doing accounts? Storms, I'm in.
Speak with your superior, then, Kaladin said. I haven't devised the proper test yet, and you'd need to pass it before you could be let in. Either way, you'd need clearance to change battalions.
Yes, sir,
she said, and bounded off.
Kaladin watched her go, then grunted softly.
Sigzil, without even thinking about it, mumbled,
Did your master teach you to be that insensitive?
Kaladin eyed him.
I have a suggestion, sir, Sigzil continued. Try to understand what people want out of life and respect that, rather than projecting onto them what you think they should...
Shut it, Sig.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
They continued on their way, and Kaladin cleared his throat.
You don't have to be so formal with me, you know. I know, sir. But you're a Light Eyes now, and a Shardbearer, and... Well, it feels right.
Kaladin stiffened, but didn't contradict him. In truth, Sigzil had always felt awkward trying to treat Kaladin like any other bridgeman. Some of the others could do it, Tefton Rock, Lopin in his own strange way, but Sigzil felt more comfortable when the relationship was set out and clear, captain and his clerk. Moash had been the closest to Kaladin, but he wasn't in Bridge 4 any longer. Kaladin hadn't said what Moash had done, only that he had removed himself from our fellowship. Kaladin got stiff and unresponsive whenever Moash's name was mentioned.
"Anything else on that list of yours?" Kaladin asked as they passed a guard patrol in the hallway.
He received crisp salutes. Sigzil looked through his notebook.
"Accounts and the need for scribes, code of morals for the men, recruitment. Oh, we're still going to need to define our place in the army, now that we're no longer bodyguards."
We're still bodyguards, Kaladin said. We just protect anyone who needs it. We have bigger problems in that storm. It had come again, a third time, this event proving that it was even more regular than the high storms,
right around every 9 days. Up high as they were, its passing was only a curiosity. But throughout the world, each new arrival strained already beleaguered cities.
"I realize that, sir," Sigzel said. "But we still have to worry about procedure. Here, let me ask this. Are we, as Knights Radiant, still an Alethi military organization?"
"No," Kaladin said. "This war is bigger than Alethkar. We're for all mankind."
"All right. Then what's our chain of command? Do we obey King Elokar? Are we still his subjects? And what Don or Non are we in society? You're a shardbearer in Dalinar's court, aren't you? Who pays the wages of Bridge 4? What about the other bridge crews? If there is a squabble over Dalinar's lands in Alethkar, can he call you and Bridge 4 up to fight for him, like a normal liege-vassal relationship? If not, then can we still expect him to pay us?"
"Damnation," Kaladin breathed.
"I'm sorry, sir, it—"
"No, they're good questions, Sig. I'm lucky to have you to ask them." He clasped Sigzel on the shoulder, stopping in the hallway just outside the quartermaster's offices. "Sometimes I wonder if you're wasted in Bridge 4. You should have been a scholar."
"Well, that wind blew past me years ago, sir. I—"
He took a deep breath.
"I failed the exams for government training in Aesir. I wasn't good enough."
"Then the exams were stupid," Kaladin said. "And Aesir lost out because they missed the chance to have you." Sigzel smiled.
"I'm glad they did."
And, strangely, he felt it was true. A nameless weight he'd been carrying seemed to slide off his back.
"Honestly, I feel like Lin. I don't want to be huddled over a ledger when Bridge 4 takes to the air. I want to be first into the sky."
"I think you'll have to fight Lopin for that distinction," Kaladin said with a chuckle. "Come on." He strode into the quartermaster's office, where a group of waiting guardsmen immediately made space for him. At the counter, a beefy soldier with rolled-up sleeves searched through boxes and crates, muttering to himself. A stout woman, presumably his wife, inspected requisition forms. She nudged the man and pointed at Kaladin.
"Finally," the quartermaster said. "I'm tired of having these here, drawing everyone's eyes and making me sweat like a spy with too many spren."
He shuffled over to a pair of large black sacks in the corner that, best that Sigzel could tell, weren't drawing any eyes at all. The quartermaster hefted them and glanced at the scribe, who double-checked a few forms, then nodded, presenting them for Kaladin to stamp with his captain's seal. Paperwork done, the quartermaster handed a sack to Kaladin and another to Sigzel. They clinked when moved and were surprisingly heavy. Sigzel undid the ties and glanced into his. A flood of green light, powerful as sunlight, shone out over him. Emeralds. The large type. Not in spheres, probably cut from the gem hearts of chasm fiends hunted on the shattered plains. In a moment, Sigzel realized that the guards filling the room weren't here to get something from the quartermaster. They were here to protect this wealth.
"That's the Royal Emerald Reserve," the quartermaster said. "Held for emergency grain. Renewed with light in the storm this morning. How you talk the High Prince into letting you take it is beyond me."
"We're only borrowing them," Kaladin said. "We'll have them back before evening arrives. They'll be warned, some will be done. We'll need to check them out tomorrow again. And the day after that."
"I could buy a princedom for that much," the quartermaster said with a grunt. "What in Kalek's name do you need them for?"
Sigzel, however, had already guessed. He grinned like a fool.
"We're going to practice being radiant."
36. Hero. 24 years ago. Dalinar cursed as smoke billowed out of the fireplace. He shoved his weight against the lever and managed to budge it, reopening the chimney flue. He coughed, backing up and waving smoke away from his face.
"We're going to need to see that replaced,"
Evie said from the sofa where she was doing needlework.
"Yeah,"
Dalinar said, thumping down to the floor before the fire.
"At least you got to it quickly." Today we will not need to scrub the walls, and the life will be as white as the sun at night.
Evie's native idioms didn't quite translate well into Alethi.
The fire's heat was welcome, as Dalinar's clothing was still damp from the rains. He tried to ignore the ever-present sound of the weeping's rain outside, instead watching a pair of flamespren dance along one of the logs. These seemed vaguely human, with ever-shifting figures. He followed one with his eyes as it leaped toward the other. He heard Evie rise and thought she might be off to seek the privy again. She instead settled down next to him and took his arm, then sighed in contentment.
"It can't be comfortable," Dalinar said.
"And yet you are doing it?"
"I'm not the one who is..."
He looked at her belly, which had begun to round. Evie smiled.
"My condition does not make me so frail that I risk breaking by sitting on the floor, beloved."
She pulled his arm tighter.
"Look at them. They play so eagerly."
"It's like they're sparring," Dalinar said. "I can almost see the little blades in their hands."
"Must everything be fighting to you?"
He shrugged.
She leaned her head on his arm.
"Can't you just enjoy it, Dalinar?"
"Enjoy what?"
"Your life. You went through so much to make this kingdom. Can't you be satisfied now that you've won?"
He stood up, pulling his arm from her grip, and crossed the chamber to pour himself a drink.
"Don't think I haven't noticed the way you act," Evie said, "perking up whenever the king speaks of the smallest conflict beyond our borders, having the scribes read to you of great battles, always talking about the next duel."
"I'm not to have that much longer," Dalinar grumbled, then took a sip of wine. "Gavilar says it's foolish to endanger myself. Says someone is bound to try to use one of those duels as a ploy against him. I'll have to get a champion."
He stared at his wine. He'd never had a high opinion of dueling. It was too fake, too sanitized. But at least it was something.
"It's like you're dead," Evie said.
Dalinar looked over at her.
"It's like you only live when you can fight," she continued. "When you can kill. Like a blackness from old stories. You live only by taking lives from others."
With that pale hair and light golden skin, she was like a glowing gemstone. She was a sweet, loving woman who deserved better than the treatment he gave her. He forced himself to go back and sit down beside her.
"I still think the Flamespren are playing," she said.
"I've always wondered," Dalinar said. "Are they made of fire themselves?" "It looks like they are. And yet what of emotion spren? Are anger spren then made of anger?"
Evie nodded absently.
"And what of glory spren?" Dalinar said. "Made of glory? What is glory? Could glory spren appear around someone who is delusional, or perhaps very drunk, who only thinks they've accomplished something great, while everyone else is standing around mocking them?"
"A mystery," she said, "sent by Shishi."
"But don't you ever wonder?"
"To what end?" Evie said. "We will know eventually, when we return to the One. No use troubling our minds now about things we cannot understand."
Dalinar narrowed his eyes at the Flamespren. That one did have a sword, a miniature shard blade.
"This is why you brood so often, husband," Evie said. "It isn't healthy to have a stone curdling in your stomach, still wet with moss."
"I... what?"
"You must not think such strange thoughts. Who put such things into your mind anyway?"
He shrugged, but thought of two nights before, staying up late and drinking wine beneath the rain canopy with Gavilar and Navani. She'd talked and talked about her research into spren, and Gavilar had simply grunted while making notations in glyphs on a set of his maps. She had spoken with such passion and excitement, and Gavilar had ignored her.
"Enjoy the moment," Evie told him. "Close your eyes and contemplate what the One has given you. Seek the peace of oblivion, and bask in the joy of your own sensation."
He closed his eyes, as she suggested, and tried to simply enjoy being here with her.
Can a man actually change, Evie? Like those Spren change?
We are all different aspects of the One.
Then can you change from one aspect to another?
Of course, Evie said. Is not your own doctrine about transformation? About a man being so cast from crass to glorious?
I don't know if it's working.
Then petition the One, she said.
In prayer? Through the Ardens?
No, silly. Yourself.
In person? Dalinar asked. Like at a temple?
If you wish to meet the One in person, you must travel to the valley, she said. There you can speak with the One, or to his avatar, and be granted
the old magic, Dalinar hissed, opening his eyes. A night watcher. Evie, don't say things like that.
Storms, her pagan heritage popped up at the strangest times. She could be talking good Boren doctrine, then out came something like that. Fortunately, she spoke of it no more. She closed her eyes and hummed softly. Finally, a knock came at the outer door to his rooms.
Hothan, his room steward, would answer that. Indeed, Dalinar heard the man's voice outside, and that was followed by a light rap on the chamber door.
"It's your brother, Bright Lord," Hothan said through the door.
Dalinar leaped, opening the door and passing the short master servant. Evie followed, trailing along with one hand touching the wall, a habit of hers. They passed open windows that looked down upon a sodden Kolinar, flickering lanterns marking where people moved through the streets. Gavilar waited in the sitting room, dressed in one of those new suits with the stiff jacket and buttons up the sides of the chest. His dark hair curled to his shoulders and was matched by a fine beard. Dalinar hated beards. They got caught near helm. He couldn't deny its effect on Gavilar, though. Looking at Gavilar in his finery, one didn't see a backwater thug, a barely civilized warlord who had crushed and conquered his way to the throne. No, this man was a king. Gavilar wrapped a set of papers against the palm of his hand.
What? Dalinar asked.
Rathalas, Gavilar said, shoving the papers toward Evie as she entered.
Again?
Dalinar said. It had been years since he'd visited the Rift, that giant trench where he'd won his shard blade.
They're demanding your blade back, Gavilar said. They claim that Tanelon's heir has returned and deserves the shard as you never won it in a true contest.
Dalinar felt cold.
Now I know this to be patently false, Gavilar said, because when we fought at Rathalas all those years ago, you said you dealt with the heir. You did deal with the heir, did you not, Dalinar?
He remembered that day. He remembered darkening that doorway, the thrill pulsing inside him. He remembered a weeping child holding a shard blade, the father lying broken and dead behind. That soft voice, pleading. The thrill had vanished in a moment.
He was a child, Gavilar,
Dalinar said, his voice hoarse.
Damnation, Gavilar said. He's a descendant of the old regime. That was... Storms, that was a decade ago. He's old enough to be a threat. The whole city is going into rebellion, the entire region. If we don't act, the whole Crownlands could break off.
Dalinar smiled. The emotion shocked him, and he quickly stifled the grin.
But surely, surely someone would need to go and rout the rebels?
He turned and caught sight of Evie. She was beaming at him, though he'd have expected her to be indignant at the idea of more wars. Instead, she stepped up to him and took his arm.
You spared the child.
He could barely lift the blade. I gave him to his mother and told her to hide him.
Oh, Dalinar.
She pulled him close. He felt a swelling of pride. Ridiculous, of course. He had endangered the kingdom. How would people react if they knew the Blackthorn himself had broken before a crisis of conscience? They'd laugh. In that moment, he didn't care, so long as he could be a hero to this woman.
Well, I suppose rebellion was to be expected, Gavilar said as he stared out the window.
It's been years since the formal unification. People are going to start asserting their independence.
He raised his hand toward Dalinar, turning.
I know what you want, brother, but you'll have to forbear. I'm not sending an army, but I can nip this thing with politics. We can't ever show a force be our only method of maintaining unity, or Elokar will spend his entire life putting out fires after I'm gone. We need people to start thinking of Alethkar as a unified kingdom, not separate regions always looking for an advantage against one another.
Sounds good, Dalinar said. It wasn't going to happen, not without the sword to remind them. For once, however, he was fine not being the one to point that out.
37. The last time we march.
You mustn't worry yourself about race. It is a pity about Iona and Skye, but they were foolish, violating our pact from the very beginning.
Numuhuku Makiakia I Alunamor had always been taught that the first rule of warfare was to know your enemy. One might assume that such lessons weren't terribly relevant in his life anymore. Fortunately, making a good stew was a lot like going to war. Lunamore, called Rock by his friends, on account of their thick, lowlander tongues being incapable of proper speech, stirred his cauldron with an enormous wooden spoon the size of a longsword. A fire burned rockbud husks underneath, and a playful wind spren whipped at the smoke, making it blow across him no matter where he stood. He had placed the cauldron on a plateau of the shattered plains, and, beautiful lights and fallen stars, he was surprised to discover that he had missed this place. Who would have thought he could become fond of this barren, wind-swept flatland? His homeland was a place of extremes, bitter ice, powdery snow, boiling heat, and blessed humidity. Down here, everything was so moderate, and the shattered plains were the worst of all. In Yakaved, he'd found vine-covered valleys. In Alethkar, they had fields of grain, rock buds spreading endlessly like the bubbles of a boiling cauldron. Then the shattered plains, endless, empty plateaus with barely anything growing on them. Strangely, he loved them. Lunamore hummed softly as he stirred with two hands, churning the stew and keeping the bottom from burning. When the smoke wasn't in his face, this cursed too-thick wind had too much air to behave properly, he could smell the scent of the shattered plains. An open scent. The scent of a high sky and baking stones, but spiced by the hint of life in the chasms. Like a pinch of salt. Humid, alive with the odors of plants and rot intermingling. In those chasms, Lunamore had found himself again after a long time being lost. Renewed life, renewed purpose. And stew. Lunamore tasted his stew, using a fresh spoon, of course, as he wasn't a barbarian like some of these lowlander cooks. The longroots still had further to cook before he could add the meat. Real meat from finger crabs he'd spent all night shelling. Couldn't cook that too long or it got rubbery. The rest of Bridge Four stood arrayed on the plateau, listening to Kaladin. Lunamore had set up so that his back was toward Narok, the city at the center of the shattered plains. Nearby, one of the plateaus flashed as Renarin Kolin worked the Oath Gate. Lunamore tried not to be distracted by that. He wanted to look out westward, toward the old war camps. Not much longer now to wait, he thought. But don't dwell on that. The stew needs more crushed limb.
I trained many of you in the chasms, Kaladin said. The men of Bridge Four had been augmented by some members of the other bridge crews and even a couple of soldiers that Dalinar had suggested for training. The group of five scout women was surprising, but who was Lunamore to judge? I could train people in the spear, Kaladin continued, because I myself had been trained in the spear. What we're attempting today is different.
I barely understand how I learned to use Stormlight. We're going to have to stumble through this together.
It's all good, Goncho, Lopin called. How hard can it be to learn how to fly? Sky Eels do it all the time. And they are ugly and stupid. Most bridgemen are only one of those things.
Kaladin stopped in line near Lopin. The captain seemed in good spirits today, for which Lunamore took credit. He had, after all, made Kaladin's breakfast.
The first step will be to speak the ideal, Kaladin said. I suspect a few of you have already said it. But for the rest, if you wish to be a squire to the Windrunners, you will need to swear it.
They began belting out the words. Everyone knew the right ones by now. Lunamore whispered the ideal.
Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.
Kaladin handed Lopin a pouch full of gemstones.
The real test and proof of your squireship will be learning to draw Stormlight into yourselves. A few of you have learned it already.
Lopin started glowing immediately.
And they will help the rest learn. Lopin, take first, second, and third squads. Sigzil, you've got fourth, fifth, and sixth. Pete, don't think I haven't seen you glowing. You take the other bridgemen. And Teft, you take the scouts and...
Kaladin looked around.
Where is Teft?
He was only just noticing. Lunamore loved their captain, but he got distracted sometimes. Maybe air sickness.
Teft didn't come back to the barracks last night, sir,
Layton called, looking uncomfortable.
Fine, I'll help the scouts. Lopin, Sigzil, Pete, talk your squads through how to draw in Stormlight. Before the day is done, I want everyone on this plateau glowing like they swallowed a lantern.
They broke up, obviously eager. Translucent red streamers rose from the stone, whipping as if in the wind, one end connected to the ground. Anticipation sprang. Lunamore gave them the sign of respect, hand to his shoulder, then his forehead. These were lesser gods, but still holy. He could see their true shapes beyond the streamers, a faint shadow of a larger creature at the bottom. Lunamore handed off his stirring to Dabid. The young bridgeman didn't talk, and hadn't since Lunamore had helped Kaladin pull him from the battlefield. He could stir, though, and run water skins. He had become something of an unofficial mascot for the team, as he'd been the first bridgeman that Kaladin had saved. When bridgemen passed Dabid, they gave a subtle salute. Huio was on kitchen duty with Lunamore today, as was becoming more common. Huio requested it, and the others avoided it. The squat, beefy Herdazian man was humming softly to himself as he stirred the shiki, a brownish horn-eater drink that Lunamore had chilled overnight in metal bins on the plateau outside Urethiru. Strangely, Huio took a handful of lasbo from a pot and sprinkled it into the liquid.
"What are you doing, crazy man?"
Lunamore bellowed, stomping up.
"Lasbo? In drink? That thing is spicy powder, airsick lowlander!"
Huio said something in Herdazian.
"Bah," Lunamore said. "I do not speak this crazy language you use. Lopin, come here and talk to this cousin you have. He is ruining our drinks."
Lopin, however, was gesturing wildly at the sky and talking about how he'd stuck himself to the ceiling earlier. Lunamore grunted and looked back at Huio, who proffered a spoon dripping with liquid.
"Air sick fool,"
Lunamore said, taking a sip.
"You will ruin..."
Blessed gods of sea and stone. That was good.
The spice added just the right kick to the chilled drink, combining flavors in a completely unexpected yet somehow complimentary way. Huio smiled.
"Bridge four," he said in thickly accented Alethi.
"You are lucky man," Lunamore said, pointing. "I will not kill you today."
He took another sip, then gestured with the spoon.
"Go do this thing to other bins of Shiki."
Now where was Haber? The lanky, gap-toothed man couldn't be too far away. That was one advantage of having an assistant chef who could not walk. He usually stayed where you put him.
"Watch me now, carefully,"
Lopin said to his group, stormlight puffing from his mouth as he spoke.
"All right, here it is. I, the Lopin, will now fly. You may applaud as you feel is appropriate."
He jumped up and then crashed back to the plateau.
"Lopin," Kaladin called. "You're supposed to be helping the others, not showing off." "Sorry, Gon," Lopin said.
He quivered on the ground, his face pressed to the stone, and didn't rise.
Did you stick yourself to the ground?" Kaladin asked. "Just part of the plan, Gon," Lopin called back. "If I am to become a delicate cloud upon the sky, I must first convince the ground that I am not abandoning her. Like a worried lover, sure, she must be comforted and reassured that I will return following my dramatic and regal ascent to the sky."
"You're not a king, Lopin," Drey said. "We've been over this."
"Of course I am not. I am a former king. You are obviously one of the stupid ones I mentioned earlier."
Lunamore grunted in amusement and rounded his little cooking station toward Haber, who he now remembered was peeling tubers by the side of the plateau. Lunamore slowed. Why was Kaladin kneeling before Haber's stool, holding out a gemstone?
"Ah," Lunamore thought. "I had to breathe to draw it in," Kaladin explained softly. "I'd been doing it unconsciously for weeks, maybe months, before Teft explained the truth to me."
"Sir," Haber said, "I don't know if... I mean, sir, I'm no Radiant. I was never that good with the spear. I'm barely a passable cook."
Passable was a stretch. But he was earnest and helpful, so Lunamore was happy to have him. Besides, he needed a job he could do sitting. A month back, the assassin in white had swept through the king's palace at the war camps trying to kill Elokar, and the attack had left Haber with dead legs. Kaladin folded the gemstone in Haber's fingers.
"Just try," the captain said softly. "Being a Radiant isn't so much about your strength or skill, but about your heart. And yours is the best of all of us."
The captain seemed intimidating to many outsiders, a perpetual storm for an expression, an intensity that made men wilt when it turned on them. But there was also an astonishing tenderness to this man. Kaladin gripped Haber on the arm and almost seemed to be tearing up. Some days it seemed you couldn't break Kaladin storm-blessed with all the stones on Roshar. Then one of his men would get wounded, and you'd see him crack. Kaladin headed back toward the scouts he'd been helping, and Lunamore jogged to catch up. He bowed to the little god who rode on the bridge captain's shoulder, then asked,
"You think Haber can do this thing, Kaladin?"
"I'm sure he can. I'm sure all of Bridge Four can. And perhaps some of these others."
"Huh," Lunamore said. "Finding a smile on your face, Kaladin Stormblessed, is like finding lost sphere in your soup. Surprising, yes, but very nice too. Come, I have drink you must try. I need to get back to—" "Come, drink you must try."
Lunamore guided him to the big pot of shiki and poured him a cup. Kaladin slurped it down.
"Hey, that's pretty good, Rock."
"Is not my recipe," Lunamore said. "Huyo has changed this thing. I now have to either promote him or push him offside a plateau."
"Promote him to what?" Kaladin asked, getting himself another cup.
"To airsick lowlander," Lunamore said. "Second class."
"You might be too fond of that term, Rock." Nearby, Lopin talked to the ground, against which he was still pressed.
"Don't worry, dear one. The Lopin is vast enough to be possessed by many, many forces, both terrestrial and celestial. I must soar to the air, for if I were to remain only on the ground, surely my growing magnitude would cause the land to crack and break."
Lunamore looked to Kaladin.
"I am fond of term, yes. But only because this thing has astounding number of applications among you."
Kaladin grinned, sipping his shiki and watching the men. Farther along the plateau, Drahi suddenly raised his long arms and called out,
"Ha!"
He was glowing with stormlight. Bissig soon followed. That should fix his hand. He too had been injured by the assassin in white.
"This will work, Rock," Kaladin said. "The men have been close to the power for months now, and once they have it, they'll be able to heal. I won't have to go into battle worrying which of you I'll lose."
"Kaladin," Lunamore said softly, "this thing we have begun, it is still war. Men will die.
Bridge 4 will be protected by their power."
"And the enemy? They will not have power?"
He stepped closer.
"Surely I do not wish to dampen Kaladin Stormblessed when he is optimistic, but nobody is ever perfectly safe. This is sad truth, my friend."
"Maybe," Kaladin admitted. He got a distant look on his face. "Your people only let younger sons go to war, right?"
"Only Twanalekina, fourth son and younger, can be wasted in war. First, second, and third sons are too valuable."
"Fourth son and younger? So hardly ever."
"Huh? You do not know the size of Horn-Eater families."
"Still, it has to mean fewer men dying in battle."
"Peaks are different place," Lunamore said,
smiling at Silfrenna as she rose off Kaladin's shoulder and started dancing on the nearby winds.
"And not just because we have right amount of air for brains to work. To attack another peak is costly and difficult, requiring much preparation and time. We speak of this thing more than we do him."
"Sounds nice."
"You will visit with me someday," Lunamore said. "You and all Bridge 4, as you are family now."
"Ground," Lopin insisted. "I will still love you. I'm not attracted to anyone the way I am to you. Whenever I leave, I'll come right back."
Kaladin glanced at Lunamore.
"Perhaps," Lunamore noted, "when that one is away from too much toxic air, he will be less..."
"Lopin?"
"Though upon consideration, this thing would be sad."
Kaladin chuckled, handing Lunamore his cup. Then he leaned in. "What happened to your brother, Rock?"
"My two brothers are well, so far as I know."
"And the third brother?" Kaladin said. "The one who died, moving you from fourth to third and making you a cook instead of a soldier?"
"Don't deny it." "Is sad story," Lunamore said. "And today is not day for sad stories. Today is day for laughter, stew, light, these things.
And hopefully something even grander." Kaladin patted him on the shoulder.
"If you ever need to talk, I'm here."
"That is good to know. Though today, I believe someone else wishes to talk."
Lunamore nodded toward someone crossing a bridge onto their plateau. A figure in a stiff blue uniform with a silver circlet on his head.
"The king has been eager to speak with you. Ha! Asked us several times if we knew when you would return. As if we are appointment keepers for our glorious flying leader."
"Yes," Kaladin said.
"He came to see me the other day." Kaladin braced himself visibly, setting his jaw, then walked to the king, who had just marched onto the plateau, trailed by a cluster of guards from Bridge 11. Lunamore positioned himself, working on the soup where he could listen, as he was curious.
"Windrunner," Elokar said, nodding to Kaladin. "It seems you are right. Your men have had their powers restored. How soon will they be ready?"
"They're in fighting shape already, Your Majesty, but to master their powers... well, I can't say, honestly."
Lunamore sipped his soup and didn't turn toward the king, but stirred and listened.
"Have you given thought to my request?" Elokar said. "Will you fly me to Kolinar, so we can reclaim the city?"
"I'll do as my commander tells me."
"No," Elokar said. "I'm asking you personally. Will you come? Will you help me reclaim our homeland?"
"Yes," Kaladin said softly. "Give me some time."
a few weeks at least to train my men. I prefer to bring a few Squire Windrunners with us, and if we're lucky, I might be able to leave a full Radiant behind to lead if something happens to me. But either way, yes, Alucard, I'll go with you to Alethkar.
Good. We have some time, as Uncle wishes to try contacting people in Kolinar using his visions. Perhaps 20 days? Can you train your squires in that time?
I'll have to, Your Majesty. Lunamor glanced at the king, who folded his arms, watching the Windrunners, prospective and current. He seemed to have come not just to speak with Kaladin, but to watch the training.
Kaladin walked back to the scouts, his god following in the air after him.
So Lunamor brought the king something to drink. Then he hesitated beside the bridge that Elikar had crossed to reach this plateau. Their old bridge from the bridge runs had been repurposed for moving people around these plateaus closest to Narok. Permanent bridges were still being reconstructed. Lunamor patted the wood. They'd thought this lost, but a salvage party had discovered it wedged in a chasm a short distance away. Dalinar had agreed to have it hauled up at Teft's request. Considering what it had been through, the old bridge was in good shape. It was made of tough wood, Bridge 4 was. He looked beyond it and was unsettled by the sight of the next plateau over, or the rubble of it. A stump of a plateau, made of broken rock that extended only 20 feet or so from the chasm floor. Verlaine said that had been an ordinary plateau before the meeting of Everstorm and Highstorm at the Battle of Narok. During that terrible cataclysm, when storms met, entire plateaus had been ripped up and shattered. Though the Everstorm had returned several times, the two storms had not again met over a populated area. Lunamor patted the old bridge, then shook his head, walking back toward his cooking station. They could have trained at Yuvathiru, perhaps, but none of the bridgemen had complained at coming here. The shattered plains were far better than the lonesome plain before the tower. This place was just as barren, but it was also theirs. They also hadn't questioned when Lunamor had decided to bring along his cauldrons and supplies to make lunch. It was inefficient, true, but a hot meal would make up for it, and beyond that, there was an unspoken rule. Though Lunamor, Dabbit, and Haber didn't participate in the training or sparring, they were still Bridge 4. They went where the others went. He had Huyo add the meat, with a strict charge to ask before changing any spices. Dabbit continued to stir placidly. He seemed content, though it was hard to tell with that one. Lunamor washed his hands in a pot, then got to work on the bread. Cooking was like warfare. You had to know your enemy, though his enemies in this contest were his friends. They came to each meal expecting greatness, and Lunamor fought to prove himself time and time again. He waged war with breads and soups, sating appetites and satisfying stomachs. As he worked, hands deep within the dough, he could hear his mother's humming, her careful instructions. Kaladin was wrong. Lunamor hadn't become a cook. He'd always been one, since he could toddle up the step stool to the counter and stick his fingers in the sticky dough. Yes, he'd once trained with a bow, but soldiers needed to eat, and Nuatoma guards each did several jobs, even guards with his particular heritage and blessings. He closed his eyes, kneading and humming his mother's song to a beat he could almost barely, just faintly hear. A short time later, he heard soft footsteps crossing the bridge behind. Prince Renarin stopped beside the cauldron, his duty of transferring people through the Oath Gate finished for now. On the plateau, more than a third of Bridge 4 had figured out how to draw in Stormlight, but none of the newcomers had managed it, despite Kaladin's coaching. Renarin watched with flushed cheeks. He'd obviously run to get here once released from his other duty, but now he was hesitant. Elikar had set up to watch near some rocks, and Renarin stepped toward him as if sitting at the side and watching was his place, too.
"Hey!"
Lunamor said.
"Renarin!"
Renarin jumped. The boy wore his blue Bridge 4 uniform, though his seemed somehow neater than the others.
"I could use some help with this bread,"
Lunamore said. Renarin smiled immediately. All the youth ever wanted was to be treated like the rest of them. Well, that attitude benefited a man. Lunamore would have the High Prince himself kneading dough if he could get away with it. Dalinar seemed like he could use a good session of making bread. Renarin washed his hands, then sat on the ground across from Lunamore and followed his lead. Lunamore ripped off a piece of dough about as wide as his hand, flattened it, then slapped it against one of the large stones he'd put to warm by the fire. The dough stuck to the stone, where it would cook until one peeled it off. Lunamore didn't push Renarin to talk. Some people you wanted to press, draw them out. Others you wanted to let move at their own pace. Like the difference between a stew you brought to a boil and one you kept at a simmer.
But where is his god?
Lunamore could see all Spren. Prince Renarin had bonded one, except Lunamore had never been able to spot it. He bowed when Renarin wasn't looking, just in case, and made a sign of reverence to the hidden god.
Bridge Four is doing well, Renarin finally said. You'll have them all drinking Stormlight soon.
Like Lyssa, Lunamore said.
Ha! But they have much time until they catch up to you.
Truth Watcher is good name. More people should watch truth instead of lies.
Renarin blushed.
I suppose it means I can't be in Bridge Four anymore, doesn't it?
Why not?
I'm a different order of Radiant, Renarin said,
eyes down as he formed a perfectly round piece of dough, then carefully set it onto a stone.
You have power to heal.
The surges of progression and illumination. I'm not sure how to make the second one work, though. Shallan has explained it 7 times, but I can't create even the smallest illusion. Something's wrong.
Still, only healing for now? This thing will be very useful to Bridge Four.
I can't be Bridge Four anymore.
That is nonsense. Bridge Four is not Windrunners.
Then what is it?
It is us, Lunamore said. It is me. It is them. It is you.
He nodded toward David.
That one. He will never hold spear again. He will